Welcome to The Art of the Interview. I'm your host, Stephen Adams. Tonight we're talking to Miles Regis, who's a fascinating conundrum, an emerging artist who's on a life-transforming trajectory in the art world after leaving the corporate grind behind, and he's also someone who's got deep and lifelong roots in the world of art, including well-known relations in the Caribbean art scene. Miles is also that rare breed who is pursued by celebrities rather than the other way around, and he's a refreshingly down-to-earth person whose perspective is an inspiration to anyone who aspires to a creative career. His work is evocative and filled with rhythms and movement, life and color. It's challenging and filled with depth and meaning. We're privileged to join Miles today in the garden of his art-filled home with his lovely wife and beautiful and bright young children.
I'm always fascinated by planes, no matter what.
Right. And we're on. There we go.
Okay,
You may hear me speak.
You may also hear me speak.
All right.
All righty.
We're here in the garden of artist Miles Regis, enjoying late afternoon on a Sunday. And I'm just fascinated. I've gotten a chance to see his workspace and some of the new work and hear about the documentary that's going on and meet his wonderful family. And so there's quite a bit to talk about.
Thank you.
Yes, and thank you for having us here. It's wonderful.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
And it's anyway, so you know, thank you for showing me some of your new work. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Wow. Well, there's so much going on. I paint every day. And I'm working on four different series of work, collections of work, all at once. So, you know, I get up in the morning and, you know, I do what I need to do. And then there's time designated for actually my producing, actively working on stuff. And I go to my workspace, my studio in the garage, and I say to myself, okay, what am I doing today? Am I doing the recycled denim series? Am I doing the black canvas series? Is it the color series? Is it that I'm also working on a Trinidadian mythology series? So it's really interesting. It depends on my mood.
Wait,
you know?
Let me stop you there for a second. Trinidadian mythology. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, in the U.S., there would be vampires. In Trinidad, there are sucuyas, elagibles.
And what are these?
And dwens. And it's based on Trinidadian folklore. So it's, you know, derived from African, our African heritage. But really just fascinating characters that we grew up in Trinidad hearing about, you know?
No, but these characters, what are they? Are they creatures of the night?
The
are they
creatures of
darkness?
The night. It's all fear-based. It's,
oh,
you know,
the best.
your grandmother telling you, don't go out late at night because a sukiya will grab you, you know?
Yeah.
And it's this, you know, image of a woman dressed in a billowing white cotton dress that is blowing in the wind. And underneath the dress, she hides the foot of a cow, a hoof. You know, it's all these. And you're like, wow, okay, I guess I don't want to mess with that.
I'm going to stay in now.
Or dwens. And, you know, I've painted, there's a piece that I did called The Seaman and the Lajabless. And that was the Lajabless I just described, actually. The sukuya is a ball of fire. It's this woman who changes into a ball of fire and bites you, sucks the blood out of you. It's much like a vampire.
Are they all women?
You know what? There's some, that's a very interesting point. Well, you know, I can talk about the children. I did a painting called Dwens, and they are let me get this straight. The souls of unbaptized children who come back to life and they live in the forest, they feed on crabs, and they come grab children and lure them away back to the forest with them. Again, fear-based. It's religion and fear-based. Like, if you don't baptize your child and he dies, he's going to become a dwen.
Yes.
And then, you know, as a child, you know, I say, you know, don't go out there. You know, what if a dwen grab you? but you know, just they're fascinating. You know, it plays on on your mind as as a child, but just as an adult, just, you know, looking at all these amazing creatures and what they represent physically. You know, a Dwen is this faceless child who wears a straw hat, and the feet are turned backwards.
Wow.
I mean,
very disturbing.
I mean, is that just a character for a movie? So I kind of, you know, with the kids, you know, with Dora and all these characters, SpongeBob and all these characters that are amazing, yes. But, you know, the world that
frightening my wife, in an entirely different direction,
exactly. But the world that my wife and I are from, you know, Trinidad, we have all these amazing things that we grew up knowing. And I said, you know what, these children need to know this.
Right.
So my way to kind of, other than the thousands of books that they get, but my way of kind of having it very present in the house was to do this Trinidadian mythology series, mm-hmm. and, you know, create these Dwens so that they walk by and see these images and kind of know them, you know?
Yes, yes, yes.
So a lot of the people who started collecting my work and the art advisors who are in my life, mm-hmm. kind of saw a couple of them and said, you know, you need to save this for a series mm-hmm. onto itself. Mm-hmm. You need to do this complete story where you're showcasing these, you know,
this entire world,
amazing world of Trinidadian culture, really.
No, it's fascinating. Yeah. And then you've got the Denim series.
The Denim series, which is, you know, I love American Rag. Mm. It's a clothing place where they have the best vintage stuff as well as current designer stuff.
Right.
And they have partnered up with this company, Soex, and they actually are the largest, I'm told, largest vintage dealer in the world. So I think American Rag gets a lot of their stuff from Soex, but they also, 20% of the stuff that they acquire, the vintage stuff, gets recycled because it's damaged and they just can't use it. So the denim stuff that they use for this recycling project goes to insulation. You know, they've created this fabric that is, you know, is the recycled denim that people use for insulation in their homes. Mm-hmm. So I was at American Rag one day and saw this fascinating just blog of recycled denim and said, oh my god, I can use this to be creative with. Let me take some home and paint on them. And at the time, the people at American Rag, they weren't aware that they were supposed to sell it. So I kind of walked away with like five slabs of for free.
It was just a lucky happenstance.
Yeah, I'm like, score. And I go back trying to get more. And I said, you know, when you got that the last time you're supposed to buy it, I said, well, you know,
oops.
I did some fascinating work on this stuff, and I'd like to talk to, you know, the company that, anyway, long story short, I developed a relationship with them and had a couple meetings, and they've agreed to kind of sponsor the exhibit where I do this recycled denim series. So I've scored a couple more.
That's great.
And plan on returning to get even additional. And we're going to, not sure what gallery yet, but we're going to showcase that series as well. And it's so important for us to, you know, recycle and be conscious of the environment and the world that we leave for the little ones. So,
and,
you know.
And there are lots of applications for recycling that aren't dull, they're not boring, and they're important, and we need to do this.
Exactly. And it just looks good. You know, just working with it was I mean, I was excited.
No, it's a fascinating looking texture.
Yeah, exactly. And exactly. You know, it looks like wool. And I was like, you know, that looks like our hair. Looks like my hair.
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah. Let me, you know, really play on that. So, you know, I've done a couple where I'm able to kind of fluff out the recycled denim and make it look like afros. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. So that really excited me.
And so how long have you been painting?
Been painting for all of my life. Mm. I grew up in a home where My mother's brother, Alexander King, was a very famous artist in Trinidad. So I grew up going to all his exhibits and, you know, going to his friends' exhibits. My mom's best friend's brother was Carly Harris, also another famous Trinidadian artist. My aunt Stephanie married Bootman, David Bootman, who was a nephew of Bosco Holder and Joffrey Holder. So I just grew up.
There is a, you were having an immersion.
World of, you know, I never formally studied art. Mm. You know, I got a Facebook message recently where this guy said, "Man, I saw that YouTube clip of your last show. I've never seen you in art class. You never went to any of that." But my art class really was my exposure to all these amazing artists.
But you had the privilege of being around these people from the beginning of your life.
Exactly.
That's an education unto itself.
Exactly. And seeing not only them in action in their studios, but, you know, understanding their journey. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing them at their peak.
Right.
Seeing them, you know, in the not so great times and kind of knowing what to avoid more than.
Right. And also that interesting child's eye view, which is so sort of unwavering and unjudgmental and just takes it all in.
Exactly. And hearing, you know, the parents, you know, my parents who were very stable people. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom is a school teacher who retired as a school principal. Mm-hmm. And my dad was in industrial relations and eventually became a judge in industrial court. So they were very, you do stuff by the book.
Right.
You know,
and the mad world of an artist.
And the mad world of an artist did not, I mean, they were very appreciative of the product of such characters, but embracing the lifestyle that came with it was so foreign to them that I was almost stared away from it.
I was going to say, you have these two opposing strands almost. How did that manifest for you?
Exactly. Well, you know, it was a struggle for me, and embraced all the positive of the straight and narrow. I mean, my life's, you know, married, two children, drug-free, very, you know, home, beautiful home, you know.
Right.
But creatively, it always was, I got to do it. I got to do it. So very late in life, you know, at 41, I became a full-time artist. You know, I did the corporate thing. I did the steady 9-to-5. And, you know, finally it was like, you know what?
But you were telling me the story about the table and how that just sort of triggered all these things that happened. Could you talk about that?
Exactly. I sold my very first piece back in 96. And I was working at Orion Pictures at the time. And decided... this table that I had in the house was a little bit old and beat up and needed some attention, some creativity, and used that as my first canvas. And I'd painted as a child, as a teenager. It wasn't cool to paint anymore. So I said, you know what? Painting's not for me. And, you know, sometimes during my 20s at Orion, I said, hey, I have this gift that I haven't been exploring. So I went to the art store and got some paint and painted this coffee table that looked old and beat up. And I did a carnival scene, Trinidad Carnival. So it's all these people dancing and people came over and they would look at the table and go, wow, this is fascinating. Where'd you get it? I did it. No, seriously, where'd you get it? No, seriously.
Thanks for the compliment.
Seriously, I did it. So I said, hey, I'm onto something. And people really, you know, so have you studied? Have you? And I decided that Christmas to buy canvas and give to friends who really appreciated the table as gifts.
Right.
So I did that. And the response was just incredible. All these people were saying, you know, hey, my friend saw the painting you did for me for Christmas and they want one. So this little side business kind of developed. Mm-hmm. And I started selling. And people then started saying, okay, so when's your show? When's your next? And I did a couple collaborative things where it was, you know, gallery downtown, you know, 500 artists, you know, I participated.
Right.
But I didn't jump in wholeheartedly only because I had this vision for my art. So what really propelled me, the journey. And it took a while. You know, that was 96. And, you know, I left the 9-to-5 world behind in 2008, mm-hmm. July 2008. But I started selling to a couple of celebrities, mm-hmm. which was my vision, right. You know, after the Erykah Badu thing. I said, you know, this is the world I need to...
Well, talk about that a little bit, the Erykah Badu thing.
The Erykah Badu thing, it was 97, so a year after I really started painting again. Mm-hmm. I did this Erykah Badu piece, and her first CD had come out, Baduism, and we were just huge fans. You know, every concert.
So that was an insane.
Oh my God, she was just so fresh, so new, so what we were about, what yes. we needed to express, and I felt it really kind of mirrored what I was about as an mm-hmm. artist, and kind of got involved. I knew some of the people who were close to her, mm-hmm. and ended up. Having one of the paintings on the set of her next Lifetime video, which I believe was her second mm-hmm. single. And we spent the day up wherever they were shooting and kind of kicked it with her, and the video was on the set and they agreed to shoot it in one of the scenes. And I think you get a glimpse of it in the final edit. But that was kind of my introduction to that world.
Right.
And a couple of... our actor friends started, collecting as well. And my big break really came when Isaiah Washington and his wife, Janisa Washington, started collecting. Mm-hmm. And
they gave you the reception in...
Yes. Exactly.
2008?
They gave, yeah, 2000, end of 2008, December 2008. Janisa wanted to give Isaiah a special present for his 45th birthday and loved this painting I did, Consequences in Black and White. Mm-hmm. And it really spoke to Isaiah's journey and what he was going through at the time. And Consequences in Black and White was a very personal piece mm-hmm. for me as well. Mm-hmm. Some family stuff that I was experiencing. I had a cousin in London who... ended up serving time for something that he didn't do. Mm. And it was just this, hey, Consequences in Black yes, and White. It was yes. a very powerful piece. And it came about, I'd gotten the news that he had gotten convicted and just literally ran into the backyard and did this piece in like 15 minutes.
Wow.
One brush, black and white paint, done.
Amazing.
And... Janisa saw it when she came over one time and said, you know, I've got to buy this. Mm. You know, I told her the title and that was it.
Right.
And I think they own about 10 pieces now. You know, they've said, you know, we're going to, every show you do, we're buying at least one. So they started collecting. And when they did the show for me, I had gotten laid off. Mm. And I was, I ran a staffing company. So I found jobs for graphic designers, right. web designers, creative talent. And in July of 2008, I was let go. And I could have, you know, I started getting calls from headhunters, mm. you know, hey, we heard you're no longer with your company. And everything kept saying, all roads are pointing to, hey, you need to be a full-time artist.
Right.
You know,
why, talking to you.
Exactly. Why jump back into, you know, and it was such a gamble, you know, the state of the economy and, you know, everything.
But, you know, if you
else.
Look at it another way, it's all a gamble.
Exactly.
So why not gamble
exactly.
on what you want to do?
Exactly. You know, and, you know, I found jobs for people. Mm. You know, why not find opportunities for myself?
Right.
You know, it was time for me to trust that I could do it for myself.
Right.
So, we had just started planning a show because Isaiah and Janisa said to me, we need to do a show. We need to, you know, get you seen. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know what? That's it. Meet Miles Regis, the artist. And Isaiah and I sat here in the backyard and he's the one that really said to me, hey, man, you need to see yourself as an artist. You know, he was saying,
makes
you know,
sense,
why are you doing this 9-to-5 thing? Like he's like, I can't even see you behind a desk. It's like, you have one image of me because, you know, you're here, we're hanging, we're kicking it, you see the beautiful art, but, you know, Monday morning, I put on, I suit up, and I become this whole other person.
Because I have to say, I have the same, I'm like, I'm having the same trouble imagining you in an office because I've only met you under these circumstances,
and
too.
And you know what? That's the whole, the dad's a judge, the mom's a school teacher.
Oh, yes.
You know? A part of me needed to suit up.
Right.
Pull the dreads back and be corporate.
And you've done it, darn it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now it's your turn.
Yeah. So I did it. I proved that I could do it, you know? But it was hard to walk away from a, you know, six-figure salary and the stability that comes with, you know, that world. So my beautiful wife said
but I
to
think
me...
That, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no.
But I think that this hiccup again has taught us something.
Oh, absolutely.
That there's a there's a gamble everywhere. Absolutely. And we might as well, like I said earlier, might as well gamble ourselves because...
Gamble on yourself.
There's no security there anymore.
That is so true. But my beautiful, supportive wife said, hey, you know what? You need to do it. And you know, that vote of confidence
right.
really did it. I was like, you know what? It's now or never. I'm 40. You know, let's do it.
Yeah, you don't want to be Grandpa Moses. No. Looking at your debut at 80. You know, speaking of women, I mean, your women are very beautiful, very elegant, very fascinating. And as I was saying to you earlier, I also see this great... sense of dance, of sense of movement in your work. Talk to me a little
thank
bit about
you.
That.
Thank you. Oh my God.
Very, very dynamic.
You know, I'm a very sensual person. And every time I pick up a brush and I go to the canvas, I need to be excited by the piece that... So every time I pick up that paintbrush... And, you know, I'm dipping that paint. I need to be excited by what I'm doing. So creating a piece, to me, it is movement. Mm-hmm. You know, I need to see something that is dancing before me, something right. that's bringing me that that excitement.
Because even the table that you painted had dancing.
Right.
You know, literally
exactly,
dancing.
Exactly. And, you know, it goes back to the culture that I'm mm-hmm. from, you know, that passion, that mm-hmm. that excitement for life. And mm-hmm. But what I see, it needs to say something. And so much a part of me is that, you know, as a musician, as a singer, I need to feel that movement when I'm creating something.
You know, and I was also intrigued by, as you mentioned, you know, Consequences in Black and White, the titles of your shows, the titles of your pieces, the title of the show I saw, We Live for Who We Die For. I mean, that is extremely provocative.
Yes.
You know, where did that emerge from?
My children. In my conversations with my dear uncle, one of my mom's brothers, Lois, so one of my idols, just a fascinating, amazing man. He said, you know, and he was, you know, as my mom's brother, he was like, okay, is he gonna be supportive of this journey?
Right.
Does he think I'm crazy leaving this corporate world behind? And he was one that really surprised me. He was like, you need to do this. What took you so long? You know. And he said, you know, that you have so much to say. I know that. I feel that. And I started talking about the children. And he said, you know, it would be amazing if you could present your commitment to your children, your commitment to family in your next show. Mm-mm-mm-mm. And the first show at Isaiah and Janisa Washington's house was Whose World Is This? And it was, you know, October through December 2008, and we were going through Obama and the excitement of that. And the show was very reflective of what was going on at the time. Mm-hmm. For the next show, which came in June, I met with Cece, and she had seen the show at Isaiah and Janisa's home, and she actually wasn't aware that I painted. And I've known her for 15 years.
Wow.
So she calls me up and she goes, listen to me. I just saw your show. Incredible. Why don't I know that you paint?
Because she's got the gallery.
Exactly. I go, Cece, hey, it's one of the things I do. But, you know, I just transitioned and I'm a full-time artist now. Right. So, you know. So she says, I'm coming over to your house. I want to see what else you got because we need to do a show. So she comes over and the show is up at the Washingtons. But, you know, the house as you see, is just filled with art every corner. And she's walking through the house going, oh my God, you have at least three shows here. I go, yeah. So, you know, what are you liking? And she identified three or four pieces. She was really digging. She's like, well, why didn't this make it to the show at the Washington's? And I said, well, I actually did this yesterday or last week or whatever, you know. It's like I'm painting every day. So she really started the direction of We Live For Who We Die For. Mm-hmm. And the four pieces, three or four pieces that she liked, I had this loose theme in my head, We Live For Who We Die For, based on, okay, where do you stand in life? You know, what do you believe in? What are you willing to die for? And for me, it's, you know, family. It's my commitment to my wife, my two kids, and this journey that we're on together. Right. You know, I'm living for them. I'd die for them. So, you know, and the initials, We Live For, We Die For, WWL4, the number four, you know, We Die For, really stood out to me. I was like, wow, that's visually is so, so appealing. So I decided, okay, I'm going to create this whole series based around that theme, that belief, that level of commitment. And, you know, I did about 35 to 40 pieces and kind of stood back a bit, had some feedback from some of my friends, the Washingtons, and we had a couple gallery owners come by. And then had CeCe come by. I believe this was in April or early May. And she saw them, and she's like, again, they're like three shows in your We Live For Who We Die For show. So she gave me, you know, out of the 35, she probably said, we definitely want to include 30. Mm-hmm. Now go choose 18.
Right.
You know, something like that.
Right.
So I had to do a final edit and selected about 20 and then looked at those 20 and said, you know what? The centerpiece of the show to me is still missing. You know, what I need to hit the nail over the head on this one. And I did the Where Do We Stand piece. That was the final piece that I included. So CeCe didn't even see it. And I kind of walked in when we were doing the installation with that. And everybody went, you know, wow, where'd that come from? But yeah, so, you know, and for the next couple of shows, you know, like I said, I have these four definite directions that I'm working with. The message needs to be just as strong, you know.
Milking the Devil to Feed the World.
Milking the Devil to Feed the World.
That title and that piece, God, that's one that just stayed with me from the first time I was introduced to your work.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about the origins of this, the meaning of this.
Ooh, that was, did that back in, I was still doing the staffing thing. I was still milking the devil. To feed. You know, it's just we just get so caught up in, and the thing with my art, I like people to view the piece, watch the title, and take away what they can from it. And the feedback I get from people is, you know, sometimes it's a whole lot more than I was ever hoping to express. So I love that. So I like that, the mystery of of art.
Right.
Where, you know, you
the personal relationship
was, you know. But for me it was, you know, that God, just that slavery to the corporate world. You know, at the time was just, it was killing me. And it kills a lot of us, and we sometimes don't even realize it, you know.
Right.
So there are lots of images in that piece. I basically went through the Sunday Times and clipped a bunch of things that were happening at the time. So there was Kobe Bryant, Lakers stuff happening, and, you know, the price of gas at the time was through the roof, and I just kind of like cut out all these headlines, stuck it in there, and it was like all the madness that was happening in the world. Got it on there and kind of just created this piece with this angel with these big, you know, white wings and this snake that's winding around this angel coming to get him.
Right.
Yeah. You know? But, you know, it was my frustration with the corporate world and just slaving to bring home the bacon, and my commentary on the fact that it's what we're all doing.
Indeed, many of us are.
Yeah.
Now, there's a documentary being done on you right now.
There is.
How did that come about?
I'm kicking it at this party, and, you know, I kind of dressed the part, you know, full-time artist now, so
I see that shirt. I just realized that's
one of my vintage hand-painted shirts, and yeah, I'm actually collaborating with a couple of designers to bring out a clothing line.
Oh,
so yeah, another one of the ventures. Yeah, but I'm at this party, and yeah, I've probably had on one of my hand-painted vintage shirts or jackets or something.
The magic happens for you at parties. It sounds like
apparently. And these guys walk up to me, and, you know, I'd walked in, and I kind of felt it too, but, you know, not trying to be vain or anything, but literally everybody kind of turned as I walked in. It's like, looking at me. I'm standing there going, what? Do I have mud on my face? What? But these guys approached me after, and they said, man, you know how to make an entrance. When you walked in as well, you know, hey, my jacket's painted. That must be it, you know. And they go, well, that's a cool jacket. Where'd you get it? I was like, well, I did it, you know. And they said, oh, you're an artist? I go, yeah. So I said, my name's Miles Regis, and my website is my name, Miles Regis. I don't have business cards. I'm like, my website is my name, Miles Easy. Regis. So he goes on his iPhone and looks it up right there. And he goes, man, this stuff is powerful. And, you know, I go, so, oh, you know, thanks for looking it up. What do you guys do? And they go, we make documentaries. And I go, wow. You know, I've been talking. I just, a couple weeks before, done the CNN piece. African Voices did a feature on Isaiah Washington. Mm. And Isaiah was so kind. He said, we're including you on this. So the CNN crew came over. And spent about 5 hours here. We had the best time. And thankfully, about 1 minute of footage ended up in the final cut. So, and that kind of planted a seed, you know, having cameras here. And the producer, who is this Haitian, amazing woman, we really hit it off. And she said, man, I got to find a way to do a feature on you. But you're not African, and it's African Voices. Isaiah's has citizenship from Sierra Leone.
Sierra Leone, so right, yes.
He qualifies as being African. And I'm like, I'm African. What are you talking about? So anyway, we started talking, and she said, you know, you really need to document your journey as an emerging artist. And, you know, I've watched, you know, stuff on Pollock, on Basquiat, and it's usually a lot of the stuff is documented after they've reached a certain level of, you know, critical acclaim. But we don't really have the story of an emerging artist documented, because it isn't seen as noteworthy until you make it.
That's what happened, exactly.
So I said, you know what, you're right. Let's try to make that happen. And, you know, as luck would have it, a couple of weeks later, I run into these guys. So I say to them, man, I was just thinking about that. Are you guys good? And he's like, yeah, you know, well, I can, you know. So we set up a meeting for a couple of days later. They come over to the house, and we spend some time together. And they go, okay, we want to do this. Let's do it. And that weekend, it literally happened within a week. That weekend, I was doing a Santa Monica Museum of Art's Incognito show, which is the most amazing event. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, you know, I'm going to call the museum and see if I can have you guys follow me around while I'm, you know, they're auctioning, you know, showing my pieces. So thankfully, they said yes. And that day we started. So they pretty much came to the house and kind of followed me around as I got dressed, and the kids were running around, and you know, just capturing
real life.
The realities of the father as he gets ready for his big show. And the plan is to pretty much just document all the art related stuff, stuff that's not art related. Sometimes they come over and they capture me in work as I create pieces. There was one day when they came over as we got the kids up for school. Literally the camera's on me as I go wake Zion up and wake Jimon up, get them into the shower, brushing their teeth, you know, getting them fed, and in the car, camera in the car, we take them to school. And I take Luann to work on the morning, so they capture that as well. And then I come back to the house, grab some coffee, and I meet on the phones, you know, doing all my art-related business stuff. Or I hit the garage studio and I'm creating. So they've been able to capture a lot of that. And the plan is to follow me around for a year and see where the journey takes
this
emerging artist for. So hopefully Incognito 2010 is where we would end the filming.
See
where I am at that point. You know,
well, I mean, from the sounds of it, things will be very different at that point. Well, you've got so much going on right now.
It already is.
You know, the seeds have been planted in many, many different directions, and I think they're going to clearly grow into big oaks.
Oh, thank you. Right, well, you know, you know, I'm being guided by God.
That's the best guide you're going to ask for.
Yes, absolutely.
So we're going to wrap up in just a moment, but I think that there's, I think there was one more thing I wanted to ask you about, which was the, you know, color. What informs your selection of color palette? Because some things are black and white, and others are just filled with vibrant color. And oftentimes, red or yellow are very pronounced.
Color is emotion to me. There are times where stuff is very serious and it needs to be expressed in black and white. Mm-hmm. You know, like my consequences in black and white, or where do you stand? It's just black, white, and gray.
Right.
And then there are times where, you know, red, color of love, you know, I think there's a lot of red present as well. But I tend to mix a lot of colors. Right. At least that's the direction I'm going in right now. And also mix different textures. Like I not to give away my secrets or anything, but I mix oil-based paint with water-based paint a lot. So, and it's who I am. You know, it's a whole lot of mixture of cultures and experiences and people and variations going on. So it just all is expressed on that canvas.
Fantastic.
The best way that I can, you know.
It's spectacular. And I encourage everybody to look at milesregis.com. To see what the work is, to see what the excitement is. Thank you so much, Miles.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.